The Logical Anarchy Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Logical Anarchy Show, episode number 5. I'm here with John, and this is Joe speaking.
How's it going, guys? I'm glad to be back. Joe and I are kind of going to do a more, general episode. We're going to kind of continue the topics of episodes 3 and 4, because it's just not letting up, Joe. It's just not.
No.
It's continuing.
Yeah, and I think we could have talked more on those subjects those days. So, yeah, it's just going to be a continuation of everything going on and the divisive politics right now and just kind of the political theater going on. It's really interesting just to watch everything with the MSN and Trump. I think we can dig into some of that, too. So I don't know where you want to start, but one thing we could mention is we were kind of talking before the episode how we don't really see a way out of this right now. Kind of the country seems to be pushing towards, I mean, there's so much divisiveness that it seems to be pushing towards some sort of civil war. Or, you know, the unrest is so great that it's kind of hard to see. It's just really, really strange times right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, did you see on the news? I was watching, I don't have cable TV, so I just watch like independent news sources that are just kind of streaming on the scene, which is probably nowadays the best way to get news. But in Louisville, Kentucky, they were having like a clash almost between right-wing, I guess, militia types and BLM protesters. And police had to get in between them, I guess. And the right wing guys always, you know, they love the police and respect them, so they backed off. But it looked pretty intense. I think there was a fight that broke out, and there was yelling back and forth. And I think to your point, like, people are now bringing guns to these things, and it's entirely, I think, predictable that people are bringing guns to these things. I mean, Kyle Rittenhouse brought a gun, but then so did the leftists. The guy that got shot in the arm brought a gun, and there was multiple people there with handguns that were on the rioters' side. So the violence, I think, is just going to continue to escalate as the division between what is essentially two completely and diametrically opposed worldviews kind of comes to a head.
Yeah, I didn't see that particular clash, but I know there's been a lot in general around the country. But just talking about that, you know, I want to riff on that a little bit. It's funny because a lot of the people on the left, they think this is a vindication, like, oh, look at all these right wingers. They're showing up. They're racist. And, you know, I think the vast majority of those right wing people that are showing up are not in the slightest racist people. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting to think the left, you know, they think they're like fighting Nazis. We've talked about this before, but I really don't think the people on the right, the vast majority, there may be a tiny, tiny percentage. I mean, I think it'd be insignificant, man. It's like 10 people or something. And they act like they're on the front lines of some great struggle. And I think the people on the right are just sick of the violence, sick of, they're not going to be bullied. They don't want to be bullied. And, you know, showing up with a weapon is not an act of aggression. Like, I mean, as far as, This is the response they should have expected. Mm-hmm. You can only destroy so much and not expect repercussions. So the reason they're showing up with guns, it's not to pick a fight. It's not to find trouble. The trouble has found them. The gun is the ultimate. It's the end all for violence. It's the tool to to say no. Basically, it's the tool to stop it.
Well, and I think the media, which is part of it, is painting it as leftists and the media in general are experts at gaslighting. And I think that's what they're attempting to do with this is, like, they want to be able to rampage through neighborhoods and people's businesses and neighborhoods. And without repercussion. So when someone shows up to defend what's rightfully theirs, their justly gained property and their lives and their livelihood, they respond to it with like, they're the victim. And they continue to do this gaslighting thing of like, well, you brought a gun, and so therefore you're asking for violence. You're escalating it. And I'm like, no, I brought a gun, like you said, because you guys are pushing flaming dumpsters down the street and looting businesses, and I don't want to lose what I've spent the last 10, 15, 20 years building, you know? And I think it's important to note, like, back in the day, you know, cowboy days, there's a reason why they hung horse thieves, because if you took someone's horse, you took away their ability to live, pretty much. The horse was critical to maintaining a homestead or raising cattle and all these sorts of things. So you take away someone's horse, you're taking away the ability for them to live. And, you know, this is like the modern day example of it. When you're smashing someone's business and you're burning people's neighborhoods down, you're taking away their ability to live. And so I would, you're attacking their life. And so I would expect for them to use violence in return to defend what is justly theirs.
Yeah, that reminds me of like on, you know, since I'm in construction and I'm on job sites a lot, that reminds me of a parallel with like when tools get stolen on job sites. You know, if personal tools, if somebody has their tools stolen, it's a big deal. It's not like just like they look at that theft as even bigger. That can cause some real issues. Like if one guy finds out another guy did it, there's definitely physical altercations that can take place from that, because a tool is used for livelihood. So yeah, it's a parallel kind of thing I see play out on a smaller scale. So I just find that interesting.
But yeah, it's total gaslighting though too. To think of the audacity of this, to think that you can walk through a neighborhood that isn't yours, where you don't live, and just trash the place. And then when people respond in violence, in kind, in defense, you sit and cry like a little baby.
It's the mere sight of someone looking like they're going to defend what's theirs. Like just the mere sight of a gun is like, oh, can you believe these people? Look at them. They brought their guns out. Like what?
Don't they know we're out here like for black lives and supporting the black community and for police accountability? Well, if that's the case, why are you not attacking the police then? You're burning people down businesses that have nothing to do with it. And I think it goes to show that this is just a greater, it's not just about reforming police or holding police accountable. I don't even think they really care about that at all. We mentioned this in the other episode. They don't care about that at all. This is a Marxist movement. It's an anti-private property, anti-individual freedom, anti-liberty movement of tyranny, leftist tyranny, you know. And of course, you know, I feel that I shouldn't have to say, oh, I'm not on the right either, you know, but I'm not on the right, and the right has its own form of tyranny. But the left has this assumption that like fascism is always on the right, and that's just not the case. Fascism can also, it's they are fascists themselves, these people that are burning down buildings and attacking people for thinking differently than them. They're fascists as well, and they seem to think that just because they put anti-fascists in their name, you know, Antifa or whatever, that means somehow they're devoid of any accountability in their actions or performative contradictions in their actions. So it's to me, it's the pot calling the kettle black, I guess, you know?
Yeah, and it's this weak philosophy based almost solely on race. I mean, it's sad because you know they're not serious, because they'd be getting behind these people that have been for criminal justice reform for years. They'd be getting behind all these libertarian ideas that we've been talking about for a long time, but they're not, because in their worldview, everything boils down to race. Doesn't matter how many times you explain it to them or show them examples, they're actually not gonna fight against changing the law in a favor that would make more liberty for everybody. they're going to use the law to be racial bullies, basically.
Mm.
And that's what it comes down to. It's the weak philosophy that everything comes down to race, and that's how they explain their whole worldview. You know, it's just this victim mentality that it's very pervasive. I mean, I don't know, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've mentioned this thinker before in our old podcast before we stopped, the Logical Anarchy podcast. I don't know if anyone's heard of Rene Girard. He has a theory called mimetic rivalry, and it's interesting because his theory talks about as groups of individuals kind of vie and fight for control of something, in this case the state, they actually have more in common with each other than they do differences. So this is why, for instance, the extreme left and the extreme right, they actually have a lot in common with each other. They're both, like, obsessed with race, which to me is, like, people that are obsessed with race and sexuality, it's like, this is some of the most boring and mundane things that you could, like, use to identify yourself. There's so many more interesting facets of being human than just the color of your skin and what gender you're attracted to or what sex you're attracted to. You know what I mean? But
that's a very basic breakdown.
Yeah. But his theory is that as people vie for control of something, there's the government right there in front, the coercive control of society, and these two groups fight for it. They actually end up using, like, they have their own terms that are relative to their group, but they mean the same thing within that group. So it's funny to me that, like, the left, you know, they sit and they and I think there's more radical leftists than radical right people right now. I think this alt-right idea, like, they're relatively small, and I think their moment has passed as far as relevancy in society. I think that might annoy some people or whatever. I just think that's a fact of the political climate right now. But the left paints these people as, like, these horrible Nazis and these horrible individuals. They're racist and all that stuff, but, like, they have this list of quote-unquote sins, I would say, that this far-right side has done. And what they fail to understand is that they themselves are guilty of these same exact sins that they're accusing others of. You know, they're race-obsessed. They make judgments of people based on race, how much melanin is in their skin. You know, it's funny. Like, for instance, the alt-right guys might say, like, oh, race mixing is bad. You know, don't race mix. But then the far left people, you're starting to see articles and people making arguments right now of, like, oh, well, white people shouldn't date black people because that's fetishizing the black women or men or whatever, you know? So they're almost, like, both in agreement that people should, like, date within their own race. You know, just as an example.
It's sick, too. And how many – yeah. And how many times lately have you seen these leftists – use the phrase Uncle Tom's? I mean, they've been that's been thrown around a bunch lately by prominent leftists. It's mm-hmm. like, do you guys not see what you're doing? The same exact thing you're accusing the other side of doing. Yeah. So no, you're right. I mean, they ultimately become the same blob almost. Just they want their different version of big authoritarianism. So yeah, it's truly frustrating.
Yeah, and I think that these ideas, like, you know, our ideas of liberty, I think there are some irreconcilable differences between our ideas of liberty and with what is viewed as, like, the right. And there's obviously irreconcilable differences between what we view as, you know, our views and what we view as the left. And there's irreconcilable differences between the left and the right themselves. And I think because of the you know, we're talking about this potential for civil war. I mean, I think we're already there. You know, we talked about Kamala and Biden. I think personally, no matter who wins in 2020, whether it's Biden or Trump, we're going to see violence in the street, no matter what. I know that Biden is saying, like, oh, this violence in the street is because of Trump, which is really bizarre because from what I understand, it's just leftists engaging in most of the violence, not people on the right. But it almost seems like a veiled threat, like, elect me and the rioting stops, you know, as far as Biden and Kamala are concerned.
Oh, yeah, they're, Yeah, they're totally passing the blame, and they're totally skirting the fact that, like you said, most of these people are leftists. And if you look at the where they're getting all their money from, too, you know, some of these prominent actors and other activists are donating to organizations that have been funding these riots, mm-hmm. and there's just no acknowledgement of that.
Mm-hmm. And I think Biden, like I said, Biden, Kamala, they're like, you know, elect us and these riots will stop, which I think the moderate centrist left kind of they've allowed this far left radicals into their group, into their club. And I think they think that they can control these people and they can use them as like their attack dogs, you know. But what I don't think they realize is that they can't control these people. Like you've opened Pandora's box, unleashed the beast.
It's already too late.
And these far left radicals are going to eat anyone that's to the right of them. That includes the moderates and centrists that have allowed them in the first place. You can't control these people. So
they're a real life virus, basically.
Yep.
It's a virus that is self-perpetuating and it will further itself to the left until it just consumes itself, man. I don't know what else is going to happen with it.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and I think the right is kind of the mainstream right is having that problem as well, because there was an episode a couple episodes back of the Tom Woods show, and I don't remember who he was talking to. I'll have to go back and look at it. If I can find it, I'll put it in the show notes page on logicalanarchy.com for episode 5. But the guest mentions something that conservatives do called triangulation. Did you listen to that episode?
I have not listened to that one yet.
Okay. What he's talking about is the left or the right will sometimes try and co-opt leftist causes because they feel that if they can ally themselves with leftists, they can get more things done as far as lawmaking and pushing things through the political process. So, you know, they might be saying things like, oh, you know, okay, we're on the side of some of these, you know, more centrist mainstream people on the right might be saying, okay, we agree with these leftists that maybe these Confederate statues need to be taken down. And so they keep like triangulating themselves, but all it does is push the people on the right farther left. So they're pretty much just like centrists at this point, even I would say leftists, which I think goes to show Michael Malice's tweet that I always love quoting of, conservatism is just progressivism driving the speed limit. Even the right is moving left. So that's because the left has brought in these crazy radicals and that's pushed the left even further left as a whole. So everything's just kind of swung left. And I think that's why we are where we are, you know?
Yeah, it's like that. I don't know if you saw that meme I shared the other day, John. It's like that meme. It's the four boxes of left and right paradigm. And everybody outside this tiny little box that's far left authoritarian, everybody outside of that box is extreme like right. You know, they're on the extreme right if they're outside this tiny little box way in the left corner. That's basically what you're saying. And I think it's true because, like you said, it's all this bipartisanship. Trying to co-sponsor bills, but it's inevitably led to bigger government, and it's the only way it can go because it's never a compromise in the favor of less government. That never happens. So that's why, you know, like I like to bring up Joe Jorgensen and just libertarian options in general. I like to bring that up when I'm talking with people who are having a debate, and then they go back to the old trope, the old tired. Well, this is the most important election of our lifetime. You know, we got to do anything we can to get Trump out. And so they're you know, they want to vote for Biden. And it's just a sad, sad argument that doesn't acknowledge what he is and what he stands for and what they're actually asking you to do. So, yeah, it's hard, but I like to bring up that third option. I mean, what other way out is there? You know, if we just continue to co-opt these bills with the leftists and just further march on down the road to bigger government. I mean, what is the way out? What is our solution?
I think it comes back to civil war because let's be honest, peaceful secession, I don't think is as an option. After the first American Civil War and Lincoln and everything involved in that, the idea that the constitutional idea that this is a voluntary association of free and sovereign states, that's thrown out the window. You know, the federal government is supreme, and if you leave, you will die. We will kill you is the message that was sent during the first American Civil War. So I don't think there's a way, for instance, a more, if things are swinging left and there's a conservative state that wants to leave the Union because they're just like, this is ridiculous, peace out, we'll be better on our own. I don't think the federal government would allow that to happen, you know, not peacefully. And because it didn't happen peacefully before. And we can talk about, I don't want to talk about it because that's a whole other episode about Civil War being about slavery, but there was so much more to that conflict than just it's about slavery. But I think violence, we've chosen the lesser of two evils for generation after generation after generation. I don't know. I really don't know. And I'm very skeptical that there's a peaceful way out of this situation at this point. I'm really skeptical of that.
Yeah, and I understand that skepticism. I do. I just wish, because I know an argument, you know, I think an argument, legitimate argument could be made that, say, the coastal states break off, you know, the West Coast could have their own little government, you know, because when you think about it, a lot of the leftists will say, well, you know, the big economies are in California or New York and some of these other East Coast states, so they'll argue, well, you know, we're the ones with the economy, so I would say, well, why can't the middle of America, the states that swing red, why can't they just do their own thing? You know, you don't need them. You have your big economies. Have your leftist utopia and let the middle of America break off and do its own thing, which it would probably gladly do at this point.
Yeah, I think they would. But like I said, I just don't see that peacefully yeah. happening. It just, because like I said, historical precedents
is, yeah, the people in power would not allow that, basically.
Yeah. And so to me, I think, I don't know, this is very cynical probably, but I try and prepare for the worst and hope for the best. That's been my view for the last few years, you know, prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
I think that's smart. I think you have to. And I think that includes, you know, we've talked about gold and ammo and guns and all that stuff. But another thing we haven't touched on that I think that includes is like getting to know your neighbors, getting to know like the people in your community that you can depend on or that maybe might need some help from you. And that's one thing I like about it's funny because living rural is painted as such a regressive thing, I think, especially by people in the city. They would think we're so backwards out here. But I feel like I know my immediate neighbors pretty well, and I know how I could depend on them or how I couldn't. But for the most part, I think there's a lot I could depend on them for, and we kind of have a little community here. And I think that's something that should be included in preparing just for the world ahead. Just get to know your community, get to be on good terms with everybody that you can be.
And that's an interesting concept to think about, too. My wife and I have talked about that. We want to move to a more rural area, probably not in California. But it's interesting how when your neighbors are physically further away, you're actually socially closer to them, as opposed to when your neighbor is just 20 feet on the other side of the wall and you probably don't even know their name. What their job is, who they are, you know, you've never had them over for a barbecue or a dinner or something like that. Like, nobody does that anymore. So to me, it's interesting, like in your case, how like your neighbors are physically further away, but they are socially closer to you than, for instance, I am to probably some of my neighbors who live yeah. like 10 feet on the other side of this fence, you know.
When we have, you know, we've had our neighbors over for barbecues, and even in the time of COVID, you know, they're not crazy. They assess the risk. We all assess the risk. They come over. We have a good time. Nobody's gotten sick. It's like life goes on. I love it, you know. And I have another neighbor that I'll go over and have a beer with or whatever, and just small talk. But yeah, I think there is something to it that we're further away, but yet have better relationships. So yeah, I think that should be included. Even if you're in a urban area or a tighter packed area, there's something to be said for getting to know the people around you. And one thing I'd also like to add, John, is I know there's there's people that are, you know, they would consider themselves Democrats out here, but it's different. It's not like living in the city. I still feel like they're a little bit different breed of a Democrat because they understand what it is to have a little more self-sufficiency. Like, they understand that if they don't do X, Y won't happen. You know, it's a little more like there's more responsibility living out here. Like, to actually live, you have to make things happen to make it work for you. So they may be on the left, but they're still an ally in the sense that they understand some basic concepts, and I can find common ground with them. And I think that we would be in this this nice community together that would actually work, if that makes sense.
Sure, it does. I think another thing I'd add too, you know, we talked about guns and ammo and stuff like that, and I think having guns and ammo is important, but having guns and ammo but like never training with it, and not even like dry fire practicing with it. So like, just go to the gun store, buy some snap caps, buy some dummy rounds, practice reloads, practice clearing malfunctions, all these sorts of things. Set up some targets like in your garage or something like that, and just dry fire practice in there. Work on acquiring targets. Learn how to use iron sights and optics. And also, like, part of, you know, like you said, meeting with your neighbors and getting to know with them, I think networking with people in your area who are of like mind as far as liberty is concerned, and training with those people so that you can work as a team. Because, again, this is me saying prepare for the worst, hope for the best. I hope you never have to use these things in reality, but the fact of the matter is that you might. But train with these people and train with a purpose with these people. Work as a team and learn how to work as a squad, as a unit. Because I think these are skills that are going to be incredibly valuable potentially come around November, if things go as ugly as they possibly can be. Like, if the worst possible scenario happens, those kinds of skills will be absolutely pertinent to protecting your community and what's yours.
And another thing, John, is like you said, you know, we hope for the best, and hopefully it wouldn't come to that. And let's say it doesn't. You still haven't wasted your time. You've made these nice friendships along the way. You know, there's still value in it.
I'd rather have guns, ammo, and training and not need it than not have those things and need it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And another thing, I think that what this time of COVID has shown us is that, like, food storage and food preparedness is important as well. You know, I don't have nearly as much as I'd like, but even just being aware and maybe having some stores of canned food, some freeze-dried food, just anything you can have, cases of water, is better than not having anything. Because, you know, you saw it got kind of weird there for a minute in the beginning of COVID. And I never got super scared, but we always knew we at least had an X amount of time that we could feed our family. And that's a security that you really want to have. And if you have the space, something like a garden or something would be even better.
Yeah, I think having a freezer, an extra freezer, is good. You can always stock up on meat, freeze it and save it. That's what I did when the meat shortages were going on. I was really, you know, it was hard to find meat for a while. So as I saw that happening, I went to Sam's Club and I bought like $300 worth of meat. Shoved it in my freezer. And, you know, some people are like, you're dumb. And I'm like, well, okay, here's the thing. If nothing happens, if meat production goes back to normal, well, then I just don't have to go to the store for a while. If meat is production is screwed over and it's going to continually be hard to find meat for the next few months, well, then I'm good. And I was right. But either way, I don't lose. You know, it's not like I'm screwed myself over. It's like, okay, well, I don't have to go to the grocery store and buy meat for 3 months because I have 3 months worth of frozen meat in my freezer. Great. This is fantastic. You know, like there's nothing wrong with that. So just taking precautions like that are, I think, incredibly important as well. So.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Well, what else do you want to touch on?
I don't know. I mean, I think, I'm really kind of been annoyed with like maybe we can switch to maybe some COVID stuff too, just in general, because I'm just still, I know we did our first episode on that, but like that's something that's been really testing my patience as of late. I don't know if it's just because of the heat and my back's been hurting, so I'm just like constantly cranky and angry, but like man, I'm like threadbare on my patience with a lot of these Democratic politicians that are just pretty much have pretty much destroyed all relevant life, all that makes life meaningful. They've absolutely annihilated. And you know, I'm seeing tweets from like Gavin Newsom or Garcetti, the mayor of New York, or I mean, sorry, Los Angeles, and saying things because you know it's Labor Day weekend, and it's like, oh, you know, I know everyone misses their families and they want to go to that barbecue, but stay home and stay safe. You know, I just want to. I'm on the Logical Anarchy Twitter. I've just gotten to the point where I'm just trolling these people and I'm swearing at them because there's no argument to be had anymore with these people. Like the lockdown has objectively proven, I think, to be a failure and to cause more harm than good. And people just seem to refuse to believe that. It's really, I feel like that's another aspect where like those of us that are paying attention are being gaslit by like these morons, you know?
Well, it's them and it's the spineless Republicans too that we have to blame. But yeah, John, I had seen that article you shared about why we shouldn't wear masks, and it really kind of that really hit a nerve with me. I was like, yeah, you know what? I mean, this is enough's enough. Like, it's time for the people to show how they really feel. And I know a lot of people are just scared of the social repercussions, but I think people just need to stop wearing them. I mean, it's gone too far. It's ridiculous at this point.
And it's so annoying too to see people say masks save lives, and coming from like CNN, MSNBC, all these mainstream news outlets talking about masks. When the pandemic first hit, a lot of these news sources were citing studies that showed that masks are ineffective, that they don't protect people. And so to me, there was a screenshot. I'll have to find it because it's worth like constantly resharing to just remind people because stuff gets shoved down the memory hole so easily these days. But like they were CNN, MSNBC, all these NBC, you know, ABC, all these mainstream news sources were talking about how masks don't work. They don't work at all. And here in Ventura County where I'm at, Levin, the health county health clerk official or whatever, he didn't have a mask mandate until Newsom mandated it. And so it raises a question. So if masks save lives, was Levin, the county health clerk official, was he wrong the whole time? And if he was wrong, shouldn't he be fired? If masks don't work, and he was right, because he has explicitly said in some press conferences here in the county that there's no scientific data to show that masks work. He said that. If he was right, then why are we wearing masks? It's all to virtue signal. It's not to protect people. It's to show who's going to be compliant and to virtue signal. And so, you know, I was one of those people that would put a mask on just because, not because I thought it would work. I just wanted people to leave me alone. Like, if I'm going in the store, I just want you to leave me alone. I don't need some quarantine Karen yelling at me, but I'm at a point now, and my wife's been at this point since the start of it, of just, no, I'm not wearing a mask anymore. If someone wants to yell at me, they can yell at me, and I'm just going to ignore them and tell them to leave me alone, go away, because I'm just over it. I'm so tired of wearing the stupid mask. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's become, like you said, it's a virtue signal thing. It's become a totally, totally a political tool. And I was the same as you. I was wearing it kind of not socially, just not to hear any crap from the Karens out there. It was funny, the other day I went into a gas station and I think I just forgot it. I didn't do it consciously, and I went in there and I'm like the only guy without a mask on, and excuse me, sir, and you have to, I said, hey, I just forgot it. You know, everybody's getting all worked up, and it's just amazing how it's become so normalized. I mean, how are we going to get out of it? You know, they say that going to keep up with all these strict regulations until there's a vaccine. And that, I mean, that's just a bunch of bull crap. I mean, when is there going to be a vaccine? How effective is it going to be? Or another thing I've heard is they will stop all this once there are zero new cases or zero.
That's never going to happen.
These kind of metrics are impossible. I mean, so basically they're saying indefinitely we're going to be living like this. And I'm just at a point where I'm like, no, I'm done. I mean, I have to a certain extent, I still have to, because to be employed at my job, unfortunately, I have to. But where I have a choice that I can actually not do it, I'm just not going to do it. I'm done. I mean, it's come to a point where I just want to live life again. You know, what's life? It's got to be worth living. I mean, it comes to a point where it's not just Tom Woods makes this point where, yeah, I mean, we could be kept alive with tubes that could feed us all the time. And but what kind of quality of life is that?
Yeah. You live in like this little bubble, and there's electroshocks that make your muscles move, and so you get your exercise and you're fed. But yeah, if it's not life shared with people, that's part of it. Even where the psychological aspect of this is, like, even wearing a mask and walking through the store. Like, remember the good old days when you'd wear a mask and walk through the store, and someone would smile at you, and you could see them smile at you, and then you'd smile back at them. Like, you can't do that anymore. You know, that it's totally, it's isolated people on every level of human interaction. And it's really sad. And I wonder about the psychological ramifications of this. You know, my wife's a teacher, and she did some Zoom things, and she did so she's teaching her class through Zoom, and she asked the kids, what, if you could go anywhere in time and do anything, what would you do? Just as like an icebreaker to like get the kids talking and know each other. Almost all the kids, or not almost all of them, but a lot of the kids were saying, I just wish I was in school or at home or just hanging out with my friends a year ago. Like, that's so sad. That really breaks my heart and makes me extremely sad to hear kids say that kind of thing. Like, I don't understand how anyone can continue to support this. It's absolutely anti-human, in my opinion. It is anti-human to believe in the lockdown still.
And I think to play devil's advocate, I think what we would hear as an argument, a counter, would be, well, we couldn't choose, you know, COVID happened to us. We didn't choose that. You know, this virus came around and nobody chose that. It's like, okay, but what people did choose, what the authoritarians chose to do, was to try and regulate everybody's life. And there's a point where you have to let people decide how to live their lives. That's what our whole goal is spreading the idea of real liberty, like letting people make their own choices, letting them assess risk in their life. And that's the way it's supposed to be.
Well, and I don't, you know, to bring this back to the first topic we talked about, which is, you know, this infiltration and violent takeover of relevant life through Marxism. It's no coincidence to me that the people that are the most, that advocate the loudest for the lockdown are on the left. You don't hear people on the right necessarily as gung-ho about the lockdown as people on the left. And it's because this is an opportunity for social engineering, which is what the left is all about. Progressives are all about, that's what progressivism is. It's about social engineering. It's about trying to sculpt society into what you think it is. And they had the perfect opportunity with this virus to do that. And just like how they're trying to sculpt the narrative and reality in regards to these quote-unquote mostly peaceful protests, they're doing the same thing with just everyday relevant life. And I think that's pertinent here because, like you said, too, to bring it to that other point, you said that there's these cowardly Republicans as well. You know, they sit and they talk a big game about how they're all about freedom and liberty and limited government. But here is an opportunity to actually prove your worth. And they fail miserably. Like, for instance, what has Trump done? He hasn't done anything, you know? There's a legitimate argument to be made that all of these governors are making, you know, blatant unconstitutional laws and mandates that should have repercussions. You know, and what has this administration done? It's done nothing. It's just cowardly sat there, and he just sits and mumbles at his his press conferences. And another thing that annoys me too is like the CDC manipulating the numbers too. They just released that, like, I think it was it 6% of all the COVID deaths were from COVID directly. Everything else was a comorbidity or someone had some previous very dangerous disease or health issue that COVID obviously didn't help. So that means only like 10,000 people actually died directly from the virus, which we've shut down a $22 trillion economy. We've caused the greatest unemployment since the Great Depression. We've ruined relevant life. We've made life absolutely abhorrent. We've caused suicide rates to go up, depression to go up, alcoholism to go up, substance abuse in general to go up. There's rehab centers saying that like the number of people relapsing on their addictions has exponentially gone up. We've done all of this to keep, because 10,000 people essentially have died directly from this virus. And most of the other people have died that they were probably going to die. I mean, it sounds horrible, but they were probably going to die this year anyways. The average lifespan in the United States is 78 years old. And most of the people that have died from this virus are well above that age. And they've had other health problems that actually killed them that COVID didn't help. But, you know, they had cancer, they had diabetes, they had heart conditions, they had all these other problems. So it's... And then again, you have the government putting old people back inside, like people that tested positive for COVID back inside nursing homes and stuff like that. That's been done here in California. It was done in New York, and I think it was done in New Jersey, and I'm sure it was done in a few other places. And people like in New York, you know, they think, oh, Cuomo's done a great job. Like this man literally, he's murdered more New Yorkers than Osama bin Laden. That's an objective fact. And you're going to sit here and celebrate this man. Like I'm so angry right now. I'm livid every time I think about this because it's just so infuriating and it's so depressing to know that so many people that we share society with are just idiots. They're just complete and total idiots. That's my rant. That was long.
That's all right. That's all right. You know, and they'll come and say, well, if we can just save one life or if we can prolong. And you're right. The statistics show that these are people that will probably die in the near future anyways, you know, and it's just made it progress faster. And so their argument is that, well, if we can just give that family a little bit more time or save one life and the sad thing is I understand that, but they really can't. I mean, you can do everything. You can try all these things and COVID, what we've seen is COVID kind of does its own thing anyways. We've seen it react differently to different populations, different countries. Now it's like we know that being in close quarters is like pretty much the opposite of what you want to do. You know, all these people trapped inside, not getting enough vitamin D from the sun, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's all kinds of implications. So the fact that we're just trying to control this thing is it's kind of we've shot ourselves in the foot.
Well, like I said, it has nothing to do with our health or keeping us safe. It's an excuse to control our lives. And if people think that the government's going to relinquish any of this power when things quote-unquote die down, when things quote-unquote go back to normal, I encourage you to look at what's happened with the war on terror after 9/11. Things never went... They've gone back to... There's a new normal, and I hate that phrase, but I think we're going to be living with these issues moving forward for a long time. And it's only going to further divide the country. You know, are we going to do this every flu season too? I kind of wonder too. You know, everyone's been locked in their homes, eating junk food, ruining their immune system. And then, you know, the flu season's coming around like this fall. Are we just going to get ravaged by that too? You know, what's going to happen with that? So, and then are we going to shut everything down again just because of the common flu, because of the common cold? People are, I think, have had enough of this, you know, and again, I think it's an excuse to push Marxism because there's those on the left that are like, they just don't want the lockdown to ever end because then it's an excuse to have universal basic income, to just essentially socialize everything and to make the government provide everything. And they have the golden egg right in front of them. So of course they're not going to let it go, you know, not willingly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a quote I want to, you know, sometimes I listen to, and a lot of times I don't like his viewpoints, but he at least seems to try and get a lot of different viewpoints on his podcast. But every once in a while I listen to Joe Rogan, and he had one of his friends on his podcast, and I wouldn't even agree. This guy's probably a lot more lefty than me, but he said something interesting. He said, you know, some poor phoneless fool is probably sitting next to a waterfall somewhere, totally unaware of how angry and scared he's supposed to be. And I feel like that's there's a lot of truth to that. It's like, you know, if you can disconnect from the news, if you can disconnect from all these crazy politicians, all these crazy cities with all these things going on, you know, you can just kind of like live your life, you know. And I know to a certain point it will affect us, especially being in California, and that's the scary part for me and you. But it's like, yeah, you know, you can also just kind of go on with your life, control what you control, and just, you know, that's all we can do to stay positive, John, because it's hard. I know a lot of our views are cynical, but it's like we got to just kind of like do our thing, try and spread a good message to people, try and inform people, and go on with our lives.
Yeah, I mean, you got to just try and be free in an unfree world as best as you can. And I don't know what that means. It's going to mean something different, I think, for everyone. Maybe it means hosting a party and having people over your house, not wearing masks, not social distancing, and just having a good time and just saying, screw it, we're going to enjoy each other's company because this is what life is about. And if we can't do this, then life isn't worth living. Maybe it's just not wearing your mask at the grocery store. Maybe it's, you know, you know, here in Ventura County, there's a church that's been defying the lockdowns, you know, they've been holding services indoors and stuff like that. No social distancing. Maybe it's that, like, you got to find your own way. I think people need to step up and be defiant. I think there's more people fed up with this than are letting on. There's a silent majority here. And those people, they just need to make their voice heard and say, no, we're over this. We're not doing it anymore. We did it your way. Things are going back to normal. We're living life now because this is unbearable at this point.
Yeah. And on that note, John, you know, I think we can, the best thing we can do is to enjoy our families, enjoy our hobbies. Mm-hmm. I hope your art's going well, you know, this whole weekend I've just been enjoying the family. We've been doing some barbecuing and grilling. And then I told you before the podcast started that I got to jam with some friends, and that was fun. You know, nobody was, we weren't worried about COVID. You know, we were within close quarters with each other, gave each other hugs. Oh, good to see you. Had a couple beers together, played some music. Just that alone for mental health. That was nice, man. You know, that's, we got to get back to normal.
Yeah. And enjoy life. I mean, that's the only, I think, positive thing that we can take out of this. And we have, like you said, we have control over that. These are elements that we can make choices on. Like you said, at your work, if you want to keep your job, you got to wear your mask, but everywhere else, you know, it's fair game.
I think it'll come to a point even there. I mean, that'll go on for a while, but I think even there eventually, cause let me tell you, the construction workers are fed up too. They don't want to wear those masks. I mean, it's going to come to a point there where eventually, hopefully people can just kind of say, nah, you know, you're going to, we can't do it anymore. It's over. It didn't work. It's, you know, let's just, either you're going to lose your workforce or you're going to let us work how we work. It's a two-way street in a employment relationship.
I think I'll end on this note because I think we're getting towards the end of the episode here. But I think that COVID-19, the government response to it in 20 years is going to be like the war in Iraq. You know how the war in Iraq, when it happened, was super, super popular? Every politician was in support of it. And now those same politicians that supported it then, even today, many of those politicians are like, yeah, it was a bad idea. It's an extremely unpopular war now. And I think that COVID-19 is going to be the same way. And it's unfortunate in some ways. It's fortunate that, like, people can realize that something was wrong in the past. I just wish that we could realize it as it's happening. Rather than 20 years down the line, like the war in Iraq, you know?
Well, that's a hopeful point of view. I hope you're right. That would be great because that would mean we're moving in the right direction. So yeah. I'm hopeful that you're right. And that would be great.
Yeah. I hope I'm right too. I mean, maybe it's putting too much stock in humanity. Cause I don't think humans generally want to be free. and we've talked about this before, you and I are weird, but God, when it hits home, when you can't be with your family, when you can't be with your friends, and you can't live life, it becomes real. The tyranny becomes real. So I got nothing more to add on the subject. We covered a lot of stuff, which was kind of cool. And to a degree, I think it was all somewhat related to each other. I mean, this year has been a doozy. So I don't know what 2021 is going to hold, but man, I hope it's better.
Yeah. It's funny because, we kind of freeformed on this one, but there's a lot going on. So we'll probably have a lot more podcasts like this one. So I hope you guys are interested, and if you guys want to follow us, please do so. They can follow us through Subscribestar, right, John?
Yeah, we have a Subscribestar set up. You get access to a Discord channel. I think it's only like $3 a month or something like that. It's like a cup of coffee. You know, instead of going to Starbucks one day, just give us $3 and you can support our podcast. Helps us pay for hosting costs and that sort of thing. So,
and we'll have, when we get enough people on Discord like that, we'll have special events, probably some live Q&As too, just for fun.
Yeah.
Something like that. So yeah, thanks for tuning in, guys. We appreciate it. And, if you have nothing else, John, I'll just say, we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah. We'll see you guys next time.